We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome to RotoWire Fantasy Football Live. Fantasy football and the stock market converge every year during the NFL draft. We see values rise and fall in real time. Now, but sometimes the values are justified. The reactions are justified. Other times, we overestimate the impact of certain situations. Today, we'll take a look at the fantasy football winners and losers after the 2024 NFL draft. Welcome to the RotoWire Fantasy Football Podcast, sponsored by Prize Picks, the best way to get action on sports in more than 30 states across the country. I'm Jim Coventry, and I'm always joined by Anthony Servino. We'll be doing a podcast on this platform every Monday. Remember to follow Anthony at The Real NFL Guru, and you could find me over at Jim Coventry NFL. Today's show, obviously, Anthony and I will focus on the fantasy football winners and losers from the NFL draft. Anthony Servino, what is it like watching the draft and realizing all the takes we had going in and then realizing what landing spot does to players?
You know, we can go into the NFL draft absolutely in love with the player. And I'll use an example like Malik Nabers. And then he goes to a team like the New York Giants, and we have to pump the brakes a little bit and reassess because the situation is not great. Same thing with a guy like Drake May going to New England. You know, he might work out eventually as a prospect, but right out the gate, they don't have a ton of support around him. So we really need to adjust how we view these players post-draft.
And we will be drafting Anthony and myself very soon. I have a Sirius XM draft currently going on. We'll find out some early ADP. Anthony's certainly going to be involved in some high stakes drafts and some underdog drafts. So we're going to get a grasp on how this is. But let's talk about this first. The winners. The first winner, in my opinion, may be an odd one for many. I feel like Patrick Mahomes is a winner. They add the speedster Xavier Worthy, who may not see a ton of targets, but will stretch the field. They added Marquise Brown in free agency. We know they have Rashi Rice. He may miss some time, but regardless, he should be there for most of the year. And Travis Kelce. Do you think Patrick Mahomes is a big winner here, Anthony?
Yeah, absolutely. When you look at Mahomes last season, wasn't great for fantasy despite still winning the Super Bowl, you know, two different mediums. Mahomes seemed to struggle at sometimes to run the offense. And a lot of it was, well, you couldn't trust your receivers. Things are going to be different this year. You have Rice, assume they draft Worthy. They bring in Marquise Brown. This is a new look wide receiver core. And if everything pops, you know, a couple of years ago, Mahomes was throwing for 50 touchdowns. I think we're going to see a rejuvenated passing attack from KC and Mahomes.
Remember, Andy Reid never met a passing attack he didn't like, but he was smart enough the last couple of years to realize the Chiefs didn't have a full array of weapons. They used the running game more. But also remember, Isaiah Pacheco, two surgeries at the end of his rookie season. He had an in-season surgery to his shoulder last year. He runs violently, so they're going to have to be very pass-heavy. So Patrick Mahomes could be back in contention to be near that top spot in fantasy drafts. The next winner in the NFL draft for fantasy football, we think it's Zamir White. Realistically, Zamir White, the only challenger he has on the depth chart is Alexander Mattison. To me, That's no challenge. Now, Antonio Pierce is the head coach. We already learned last year when he took over, they want to play defense, which will work many weeks, and they want to run the football. Zamir White made 4 starts last year, and he had between 13 and 17 PPR points in those games. So obviously not a super high ceiling player, but with no competition of note, late picks, fine, whatever, but no notable competition added. Therefore, Zamir White should be a locked in lead back. Thoughts?
Yeah, I absolutely love Zamir White. And a big reason why I feel like he is a winner, they got new offensive line help in the NFL draft. They did not draft a quarterback, which means they're going to have to lean on Zamir White to run this offense. And you talked about those 4 starts. Zamir White caught 9 passes across those 4 starts. He also had at least 85 total yards in all of them, topping 106 in 3 straight. So we know this guy can produce. And after a full offseason working with the starters, you know, this could be a big time season for Zamir White. And I don't really care, like you, about Alexander Mattison either.
People hear me say this, but I'm never going to stop saying it. Volume is king in fantasy football. And as of right now, Zamir White projects to have outstanding volume. The next players, it's a group that are the fantasy football winners: Dak Prescott, CeeDee Lamb, Jake Ferguson. I think as a trio, they are big winners. First of all, Dallas added some much-needed offensive line help because they lost Tyron Smith. Tyler Biadasz, the center, is gone. Although he wasn't great, he was serviceable, but they added some help. Also, no notable running backs were added. Now, we're hearing they may sign Zeke, but Zeke's not going to be a 1,200-yard back anymore. So last year, we learned until the week 7 bye, Dallas was kind of a balanced team. Once Mike McCarthy realized they don't have a sustaining rushing attack, they went pass heavy. And Dak Prescott, after the bye and through the NFL playoff game, he had at least 29 fantasy points 7 times. And CeeDee Lamb was off the charts. Are these players as big winners as I'm making them sound?
Yeah, absolutely. Not bringing in a running back of note is huge, because this means this offense is once again going to be all about Dak Prescott. Even if they do bring in Zeke, he's not the old Zeke. We've known this for years. And what I love about bringing Zeke back, if it happens, he's a chain mover. He will pick up those first downs that Tony Pollard couldn't, which means more opportunities for that offense and Dak Prescott.
Yeah, this is a very exciting situation. And again, all 3, even Jake Ferguson, because in my mind, we like Jalen Tolbert a little bit. And we know Brandon Cook scored some touchdowns last year. But realistically, Jake Ferguson could compete for a number 2 type role in the passing attack. He may not be the number 2, but in some weeks he will be. Ladd McConkey is the next winner in this deal, the fan of the NFL draft. He landed with the Chargers. Now, we already know they have Joshua Palmer. They have Quentin Johnson, not so good. McConkey can play on the slot or on the outside. Gets open super quickly. We know Jim Harbaugh wants to run the ball, but they may not have a great rushing attack. The interior line is not great. The running back room, Gus Edwards, you know, fine. He was fine with Baltimore, but he's getting older. J.K. Dobbins off of injury. Overall depth chart, they spent some capital on a running back, but nothing substantial. So that said, McConkey should see a lot of targets here. Thoughts?
Yeah, there's a clear path for Ladd McConkey to lead this team in targets, and that's certainly not a hot take. He enters a really good situation with the quarterback and Justin Herbert, and even if they are they're a run first offense, which they will be, because we know Harbaugh, we know Greg Roman, you got to think about Mark Andrews. And in that Greg Roman offense, he saw one season 154 targets. So there's going to be some volume there. It's probably going to be funneled to one guy. And barring any weird setbacks, Ladd McConkey's going to be that guy.
One of the difference between the Greg Roman Ravens teams and the Chargers team that he's now running the offense for, the Ravens always had a really good defense, and they could play lower scoring games. The Chargers have some star power. They're going to give up a lot of points. This is not going to be a great defense. And I think ultimately Roman had the luxury, right, Anthony, of running all those times because they were the Ravens. That luxury may not be here. Any quick thought there?
No, I agree. The defense is kind of turning over a little bit with the Chargers, and it wasn't really great with the old regime anyway. So there should be some more passing opportunities. And plus, in those years with Roman's offense in Baltimore, Lamar was still trying to figure out as a passer. We don't have that issue with Justin Herbert. They're going to be quality targets.
They are from an elite passing quarterback. That's nothing about Lamar Jackson. That's only something about Justin Herbert. Caleb Williams was a massive winner in this draft. We knew the Bears were going to draft him. We didn't know they were going to pick up Romo Odunze. So DJ Moore, Keenan Allen, Romo Odunze, Cole Kmet. And if the Bears are inclined to use DeAndre Swift as a receiver, the Lions did, the Eagles did not. But if Swift is a part of the receiving game, he is a dynamic after-the-catch receiver. And that said, Shane Waldron's the offensive coordinator. We know that he can run a very strong passing attack. We saw 2 years ago in Seattle when Geno Smith threw 30 touchdowns. But all that said, with Caleb Williams, don't be surprised if the Bears come in as a pass-heavy team. They have a running back group, but they know the focus of their team is going to be around this young quarterback, and they've given him weapons for now. Thoughts?
You know, Caleb Williams is entering a rare situation. Usually when you're the number one overall pick, you're going to a poor football team. That is not the case. Chicago was serviceable last year. They brought in Odunze. They brought in Keenan Allen. So Caleb Williams is entering a situation with the Bears with a loaded core of pass catchers. It's just a matter of, are they going to unleash Caleb Williams out the gate? I think he will be unleashed at some point, but are there going to be some growing pains early, or is he going to hit the ground running as a passer?
I am very excited with Caleb Williams, and some of the ADPs before the draft was quarterback 17. He's creeping up in that area where I might take a flyer on him around quarterback 12-ish. Thoughts?
Do you think that's a little bit too high for Caleb Williams? I feel like drafting him as a top 12 quarterback might be a little bit risky, especially when you look at these quarterbacks going behind him. And I know we've referenced this on the draft shows, you know, guys like Cousins and the value you can get from Kirk Cousins or Trevor Lawrence. They added a wide receiver. So there's some nice quarterbacks going behind Caleb Williams in ADP that I'm probably willing to wait and take them.
As I said, the 12-ish, I put the ish on there because I won't, it's me in that range. But yes, I get what you're saying. But realistically, Caleb Williams could be a little above average as a quarterback walking in. That receiving room is lethal. And maybe Keenan Allen gets hurt, right? But that said, like you said, you have him a little outside. I have him at 12-ish. You know, settle in my rankings this afternoon for sure. Maybe, you know, maybe 14 or so, but he's better than the 17. I think that he had been indicated pre-draft, but good call on that. JJ McCarthy is another winner because he fell. The Vikings have Justin Jefferson. They have Jordan Addison. They do have a very solid offensive line, and they have Kevin O'Connell, who is very good at getting receivers open quickly and making it a very quarterback friendly system. Was JJ McCarthy a winner here?
Yeah, look, you know, we love what Caleb Williams got drafted to. Look at JJ McCarthy's set of weapons with Addison, Hockenson, once he's healthy, Aaron Jones, who is a versatile running back, can certainly catch the football out of the backfield, and of course, Justin Jefferson. If J.J. McCarthy, now a little bit of a worry I have is that he wasn't asked to throw a lot in college. He'll probably get over that in this O'Connell offense. Another question I have is, will he be the day one starter, or will they put Sam Darnold out there? But either way, J.J. McCarthy is entering a really good situation. Now, his ADP is in the tank. I expect it to rise. I think he's the 29th off the board right now, an underdog. That's certainly going to go up.
Yes, but it's a very good point that it is possible Sam Darnold does start early in the season if the team feels McCarthy is not quite ready to go. There could be complexities learning the offense. And like you said, he was not a high-volume passer on a Michigan team that was able to dominate with the run game and throw when they needed to. Keon Coleman goes to the Buffalo Bills. That was as good of a spot as I think Coleman could have hoped for, because the one thing the Bills didn't have was a real outside possession receiver. And some people see Keon Coleman as much more than that. And if he becomes much more than that, his fantasy value could go extremely high. I see him as a big wingspan, a big body, will be able to, you know, win on the outside where Josh Allen is going to need him. The team has Khalil Shakir, Curtis Samuel, better guys that are better suited for the slot. And of course, Dalton Kincaid, tight end who runs in the slot. And then outside of that, I think Coleman is going to walk into a strong target share from day one. Thoughts?
Yeah, anytime you are drafted to an offense led by Josh Allen, you're an instant winner. And on top of that, they move off of Diggs. Gabe Davis is out of town. There's a clear need for an alpha wide receiver in this wide receiver room. And as much as we like Shakir, he was probably not going to be it. Curtis Samuel, nice player, but probably just a guy at this point of his career. I like Kincaid, but if Keon Coleman is the real deal, he should be funneled targets in this offense.
Kyler Murray is another winner. They add Marvin Harrison right there, makes him a winner. But remember, Michael Wilson was drafted last year, and Michael Wilson, remember this, when Kyler came back, Wilson was hurt and missed a number of games, and then Wilson's first two games back, he did nothing with Murray, but that was still, like, Wilson was not quite right. The last two games, Wilson was a factor with Murray, so we saw some chemistry. And of course, Trey McBride, that is a very nice trio with, again, Harrison, Michael Wilson, Trey McBride, and of course, James Conner in the backfield. Thoughts on Kyler Murray?
I love Kyler Murray going into this season. And a lot of it is because of the Marvin Harrison Jr. edition, of course, best wide receiver, we believe, in this draft class. I like Michael Wilson last year. I was taking a lot of him in the back of, you know, of fantasy drafts, but they also have James Conner. They also added, Benson at running back. So yes, this is a true nice offense to begin with. And Kyler, you know, this might be the best set of weapons he's had since entering the NFL. And of course, McBride, I even forgot to bring him up. So they really got Kyler some help. Probably for the first time. Like, I know he had Hopkins and Marquise Brown, but for injuries and suspensions, they were hardly on the field.
That's a critical point. You're right, because they were technically there, but they often weren't playing together. So that's a big point. And again, the Cardinals may have tried to make some additions to address their defense. This defense is still a long way away from being strong. So the Cardinals are going to have to score points, and they're going to have to throw often. And that's an added benefit with these weapons that Kyler Murray will have. And now a year removed from the ACL, maybe we see a bit more of that mobility. He was running last year at the end of the season, but we might see more of that Kyler Murray level of mobility. A prize picks. It's the best way to get action on sports in more than 30 states across the country. Now, Prize Picks is really simple to play. I can make my picks and submit my entry in less than 60 seconds. Now, you pick just more, you pick the more or less on two or more players with the player stats and watch the winnings roll in. The posted yardage totals for the 2024 season for A.J. Brown, 1,275 yards. For Justin Jefferson, it's 1,375. And Deontay Johnson of the Panthers, 825 yards. I'm going with the more on each of those numbers. Quick withdrawals, easy gameplay, and an enormous selection of players and stat types are what make Prize Picks the number one daily fantasy sports app. You can download the app today and use the code ROTOPOD, ROTOPOD, for a first deposit match up to $100. That's promo code ROTOPOD for a first deposit match up to $100. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy. All right. Another winner in the draft was Devin Singletary. Look, he's an average NFL back. Other than any late picks they added at running back, nobody of note got added. Eric Gray is on the roster. To me, that hasn't shown any type of competition. Devin Singletary, by default, may be in a three-down role.
Yeah, he's certainly a winner. I'm just not going to be too excited to draft him. Last year was possibly the best we've seen out of Devin Singletary, and he was on a much better offense and a much better situation, and he still wasn't that great. I'll be taking some shots on Devin Singletary, but he'll be more of a high floor player, hopefully, in PPR leagues if he can catch some passes. But this is also a Giants offense where you know, if we're counting on touchdowns, are they really going to be inside the five where they can give it to him around the goal line?
You know, we are less than 1 year removed of Chuba Hubbard and Rashad White being some levels of league winner. In my mind, Rashad White's decent. He's a good pass catcher. And in my mind, Chuba Hubbard is your definition of a replacement level player. I agree with you. It's Singletary. At least the good news is they brought in Malik Nabers. They drafted Theo Johnson. Wandale Robinson's healthy. Now they got a quarterback issue. But at least they might have some bodies at receiver that defenses at least have to pay attention to. Saquon Barkley drew the short straw, and that defenses didn't respect any receiver on the team at all, and he just had everything loaded against him because teams saw him as the weapon. No team is going to see Singletary as a weapon. They're not going to say, oh, my gosh, we got to stop Singletary. I don't disagree with you on any of that, but I do think this is a volume is king idea here. And like I said, we're not shooting the moon for him.
Yeah.
But like you said, as a mid-range running back too, he's going to have a floor almost every week. And even though, again, not a great receiver, he can catch the football, and he may be in on those downs when that happens. So all that said, like I said, he's a winner, not a very good player. But if he gets volume, there's going to be a lot to be said for that. It's hard. It's difficult because there are players we don't like, but we have to sometimes look at the situation. Ray Davis was a big winner. He goes to the Bills because the Bills had James Cook, and then they had Ty Johnson, and then they had Darrington Evans. Well, none of those backs are sustaining bigger backs. Ray Davis does have the profile to be able to run on some early downs. James Cook is not likely to be able to handle a heavy workload for a full season, and the Bills probably can't afford for James Cook to go down, because if he does, that really torpedoes a lot of their offense. So I think Ray Davis could be looking at 10 carries a week in many games. Thoughts?
You know, they tried deploying a bigger back in Damian Harris. They brought him in, of course, unfortunately suffered the injury. He's now retired. You know, they brought in Latavius Murray, who saw some work despite his age. They brought in Leonard Fournette towards the end. So they've been looking for a bigger bodied back to lean on, and Ray Davis could be it.
Troy Franklin was a big winner as well. He goes to the Broncos. Now he's going to go back and play with his college quarterback, Bo Nix. And so there's an instant chemistry. We know Cortland Sutton's there, but outside of that, Josh Reynolds, who it's a new team for him. He's a serviceable possession guy. Tim Patrick is coming off of two lost seasons, and the last one was an Achilles, and he's 30. Marvin Mims is a nice deep threat, but I don't know that he's like maybe a three-down player. Maybe he is, maybe he's not. But Troy Franklin should have a very realistic chance, maybe not week one, but early in the season to be a regular part of Sean Payton's offense.
You know, Troy Franklin fell in the draft, right or wrong, but he landed in a great situation. You know, he's now reunited with Bo Nix, and there's going to be instant chemistry there. These are two players to where if Denver hit on them, they could be franchise altering in a Sean Payton offense.
That's very well said, because Sean Payton can make you a star if you play in a system. And so there's a lot of traction for that. Again, Troy Franklin, definitely a player on the rise. Theo Johnson of the Giants. I liked him out of Penn State as a seam stretcher. We talk all the time. The league is 75% zone. You need people in the seams and the creases of the zone. If Darren Waller retires, which seems to be a true 50-50 prophecy, we thought at one point he did retire.
Yeah.
But then when we looked up, now it's like he is just waiting this out, but the decision won't be long. So again, Theo Johnson, it's on the fence, but if Waller retires, they probably will run some two tight end sets. Bellinger should be the blocker, but Johnson was brought in, should be an immediate receiving threat. Thoughts?
Yeah, this is a strange situation in New York, because this offseason they also brought in Jack Stoll and Chris Manhertz, but I think they're more blocking tight ends. They got Bellinger there. So this Giants team is preparing possibly for a Darren Waller retirement, and even if he does play, are they preparing for him to go down with injury? So here we have Theo Johnson, fourth-round pick. There's a path to production for him in this Giants offense that, yeah, I get they brought in Nabers, they have Wandale. There's still a need for a legitimate pass-catching tight end in this offense.
If there is any world – I want to just backtrack here. If there's any world where Daniel Jones can be like like a top 20 passer, maybe he can get – we have to remember, when Daniel Jones got Brian Daboll, his receiving weapons were awful. they were throwing like Isaiah Hodgins. They were throwing to a lot of replacement level guys. And I like Slayton, but at the end of the day, he is fine there, but he's a 700-yard receiver.
Yeah.
With Neighbors, with whoever's a tight end, Waller, if he's back, Theo Johnson, they have some Wandale healthy. They have some weapons. If Brian Daboll could somehow get just enough out of Daniel Jones open quickly, there could be something. Again, I'm very optimistic on Daniel Jones, but he's never had weapons before. Is there any chance that Daboll could get him to a top 20 quarterback?
There is. We've seen it before. But, you know, is it too late? Is Daniel Jones, I don't want to use the word cooked because he's still young, but, you know, now he's coming off of injuries. Is his confidence shook? Does Daboll still believe in him?
Oh, man. Yeah, and they really, and they last year they had Tyrod Taylor, which was nice. At the end of the season, they discovered him, but Tyrod Taylor's no longer there. The last winner, Darnell Mooney. Now, Anthony and I love Darnell Mooney. His numbers in Chicago weren't great. He's 3 years removed from a 1,000-yard season. The passing game in Chicago was toxic. Coaching issues on how they use Justin Fields. We knew when Darnell Mooney went to the Falcons. We know Drake London's there. We know Kyle Pitts is there. But Mooney is a true 4-3 guy. He can play on the outside. He can play in the slot. Kirk Cousins can throw the ball downfield. And the Falcons did not make notable additions to their wide receiver room in the draft. They didn't spend any significant draft capital on the position. So Mooney has to be locked in as a full-time starter.
Yeah, absolutely. The they brought in a 6th-round pick, Casey Washington, but he might not even make the roster. You know, we know that they brought in Rondale Moore. You know, he'll be the 3. He's more of a gadget-type player to me. Same thing with Ray-Ray McCloud. Darnell Mooney in 2 wide receiver sets, barring injury, will be the guy. We've seen him handle volume in Chicago. I don't know if we've ever seen the peak of Darnell Mooney because of how poor the system and quarterback play was. So now you're in a Kirk Cousins offense. I think the sky's the limit for Darnell Mooney, and at his price point, his ADP is fair right now.
We will talk about the fantasy football losers after we take a short break. All right.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
First loser, Michael Penix Jr. He gets drafted number 8 by the Falcons. Now, apparently the Falcons had told Kirk Cousins they were going to address quarterback later in the draft. They did address it, but in the first round. But Michael Penix, obviously Kirk Cousins, we have not heard health problems. And I'm going to address this first. Kirk Cousins said in March he could drop back. He could make his passes, but if he had to leave the pocket, you could tell he had an Achilles. That was 5 months prior to the season. So that's, and he's not going to leave the pocket much anyway, as it was. He hasn't been doing that for years, but five more months of recovery for him, a player already ready to drop back. To me, there's no issue that Cousins is ready week one. Michael Penix is somebody people had coveted as a guy who could make a difference for one of these six quarterback needy teams. Now he's just a bench player.
Yeah, I don't love this pick by Atlanta. I've been overcritical. You know, they've had such a terrific offseason, and to go ahead and do this in the draft when they could have added an impact defensive player, I think it's a big-time blunder. You know, what type of move is this? A lot of people think, well, they're worried about Cousins' injury. Well, if you're worried about that, like, go pick up Jimmy Garoppolo if you want a backup quarterback in case Cousins isn't ready. You don't go get Michael Penix, who some people thought was going to fall in the draft anyway. If anything, the Falcons are trying to look ahead and maybe develop Penix behind Cousins, almost like an Alex Smith Mahomes or a Brett Favre Aaron Rodgers. That's the only logic I can put behind it.
And as we talk about the Michael Penix move, what ended up happening now when the Raiders were on the clock to pick, there was not that last quarterback option. And I don't know if the Raiders wanted Michael Penix, but if they did, Atlanta making that luxury pick kept the Raiders with Gardner Minshew and Aiden O'Connell. Now, some people will look at last year and say, oh, Gardner Minshew did well. Look, Shane Steichen is a mastermind. Mm. And if you look at Gardner Minshew's numbers, he helped them win games, but those were not very good passing numbers. The team was able to do it through with Steichen in the running game, and it really a lot of smoke and mirrors too. But now we're going to the Raiders. We already said this earlier with Zamir White. This is going to be a team that plays defense. They run the ball. So the losers for the Raiders, Davante Adams, Jacoby Myers, and Brock Bowers, because I don't know how much they're going to pass. And remember that Kansas City game on Christmas last year, Anthony? Davante Adams, I don't believe he had a catch because they went up early in that game and they just ran, and didn't even throw the football.
Yeah, and you mentioned those guys, plus Mayer's still on this roster. So these pass catchers for the Raiders, big-time losers. And I like Gardner Minshew. But again, he was a product of Shane Steichen in Indy. And he's, you know, and I don't want to say he's going to regress, but, you know, I don't think he's going to be the same Gardner Minshew that we saw last season. You know, is there any hope that the Raiders maybe tinker with Jimmy Garoppolo again? I don't see. I'm looking at quarterback free. There is nothing out there.
As you talk about Gardner Minshew, and let's remember this. Other than Shane Steichen being able to cook up these great game plans, every other year of Gardner Minshew's career, he started out great. And once the team saw the tape on the offense he was running and his role in it, Minshew all of a sudden turned into dust. It was interceptions and bad throws because teams would take away his first read. And last year, Steichen was always a step ahead of defenses, so Minshew stayed ahead of that game. It's going to be the same Gardner Minshew we saw other than last year because the history has been fairly lengthy at this point. Another loser, Kyren Williams and Blake Corum were the Rams. Now, Kyren Williams had the great fantasy season last year on immense volume. And Sean McVay is likely to keep Williams in a bell cow role. But he's going to lose at least some touches to Blake Corum. So that's the first some. He won't lose probably a ton, but enough to maybe take that edge off of him being like a top five fantasy running back. Corum is a loser because there are plenty of teams he could have walked onto where he would have been the lead back, and now he is definitely second fiddle to Kyren Williams. Go ahead, Anthony.
Yeah, this is I think somewhat of a necessary pick because you need running back depth in this league. But Blake Corum, very good in college. Again, I'm with you. He's a loser. Kyren, what if Blake Corum eats into his workload? That makes him a little bit of a loser here. What this reminds me of is Zach Charbonnet of last season, where a lot of us loved Zach Charbonnet, but drafted into an offense with a clear-cut starter in Walker.
That's a good comp in terms of the role, right? Because Charbonnet got five or so carries a game, and it wasn't much. And Corum may be looking at that too. But with the depth chart without Corum, Kyren Williams might have been seeing, let's say, 23, 24 touches a game. That might be 20 touches a game now. It's still fine. Kyren Williams is still a running back one. But maybe he's not that elite level that we were thinking, where people were taking him in the first round. Maybe this makes him a little closer to the early second round. Is that about right or is that wrong?
I think I'm about there with you.
Okay. Chuba Hubbard was a big loser. And if we remember Chuba Hubbard down the stretch last year, over the last seven games, Chuba Hubbard was averaging about 20 touches a game, and he had at least 11 PPR points in all seven of those games. So people who had him on the roster, he was not the league winner, but he certainly was on rosters that were able to get to the finish line because of Hubbard producing. The team added Jonathan Brooks. Now, he's recovering from an ACL. We don't know exactly how he is along in that, but worst case scenario, even mid-season, Jonathan Brooks you think could be a factor. And Chuba Hubbard, look, not a very good tackle breaker, not very good in yards after contact. He was a poster child for volume as king in fantasy football. That volume has to likely get eaten into if Brooks has anything coming out of Texas.
Yeah, they spent some draft capital on Brooks, and this was a team with quite a few needs. This tells me, well, you know, Miles Sanders looks like a swing and a miss. You know, we like Hubbard. We don't love him. And at some point, I do believe Jonathan Brooks is going to take over this backfield. He could be the most impactful running back drafted this season into the NFL.
And I think that's the bigger point, right? Brooks can easily become the number one in this backfield. Hubbard is not a very big hurdle to overcome. Again, we saw the fantasy gold last year, and we liked that, but that's fantasy. That's not real football. He was not a very good running back. Like you said, Brooks is in a great, great position to take a lead role here. And we know Miles Sanders is not an option at this point. They proved that last year. All right, the next loser in my mind is Rashad White. They brought in Bucky Irving. Now, they're similar backs in terms of stature and skill set, but Rashad White had 272 carries and 70 targets. That's 342 opportunities, 17 games. It was 20 opportunities a game for Rashad White. He was only, Rashad White, 26 in broken tackle rate. White was 33rd in yards after contact, and he was a little worse than that as a rookie. So he is not a plus runner. He's a very good receiver. So Bucky Irving should come in and cut into at least the rushing volume that White had, because no coach wants to give any running back that's not a superstar 340 opportunities. Derrick Henry, sure. You want to give that to a Saquon Barkley? Fine. Rashad White's not in that picture.
No, in fantasy, White was terrific. RB10 fantasy points per game, RB4 in PPR overall. But was he a great football player? It's almost like when I was looking at Hubbard a few minutes ago, 3.7 yards per carry. You look at Rashad White, 3.5 yards per carry, 4.6 yards per touch. So another case of volume giving us fantasy production. They did not have a legitimate threat to Rashad White's touches on this depth chart. They brought back Chase Edmonds. You know, Sean Tucker did not work out. Bucky Irving, there's a really good chance that he's not going to take the job away from Rashad White, but I certainly think he eats into this workload.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. It is not optimal because, again, White lived on incredible volume. Again, 342 opportunities between targets and carries. Not many running backs in the league saw that last year. I do see Trey Benson as a loser here. Now, Trey Benson doesn't have a lot of wiggle to his game. He's a quick downhill. He's a downhill runner who's very fast, but he goes into the backfield, James Conner. Now, we saw last year, Conner was not seeing the 90% snap share he saw in 2022. He was sharing work. So Benson's going to get some work here, but Benson could have turned up on a number of teams where he would have been the lead back. He'd gone to Dallas. Had he even gone to Tampa Bay, he would have probably won the early down role and White would have been a receiving back. But here, James Conner is still going to be the lead guy. Now, Benson's going to have value because Conner's going to miss his three or four games. We know that. It's been the case almost every year. So Benson will have his moments. But Benson is going to be a clear number two to Conner because Conner had the best year of his career last year, 5 yards per carry. And he has always been very good since he's suited up in Arizona. And they love that man. They're not going to take that much work away from him. They already built that in from last year. Thoughts?
Yeah, Trey Benson, immediate loser outside those few games, again, that Conner's going to miss. Where you can get Trey Benson as a winner is in dynasty leagues. I believe Conner is a free agent, unrestricted free agent in 2025. At that point, I highly doubt Arizona brings him back, and this could be Benson's backfield. So nice guy to look at in dynasty.
Yeah, that is important because James Conner's either 28 or 29 this year. Yeah. I don't have that in front of me, but this is going to be it for him in terms of being the lead back. After this, he might get a 1-year deal. Go ahead.
He's going to be 29 on May 5th.
Yeah, so that's exactly right. He's 28 and he'll be 29 varies like in a week or so. Yeah. So, yes. So, James Conner again this year, great. And going forward, it is Benson. So, like you said, Dynasty, this is a little bit of a buying opportunity for those that kind of see Conner as a stumbling block. It won't be for long. A.D. Adonai Mitchell goes to the Colts. I see it as a loser, though. Love the player, and he was one of my favorites on the receiver board. Michael Pittman, already established, got paid. He's going to be a target hog for them. Josh Downs is going to be in the slot, and the Colts played over 70% three receiver sets last year. So Downs will be on the field often. And that said, how much are they going to run the ball? Because they have Jonathan Taylor and Anthony Richardson. Remember, Taylor and Richardson never played together a single game last year. And you know that that running between the two of them is going to be a big part of this offense. So A.D. Mitchell could be the third option in the passing game on a team that might be very run heavy. Thoughts?
Yeah, I think Mitchell, you know, outseats Alec Pierce. You know, they don't have a lot of reliable tight ends in this offense. The but here is how much are they actually going to throw the ball when you have somebody like Anthony Richardson, who certainly can run as a quarterback. You of course have Jonathan Taylor. This is going to be a run-centric offense, and they just gave Michael Pittman a ton of money. So I love the talent of Mitchell. I don't love this landing spot.
Mitchell will have weeks. We definitely will have weeks. There'll be weeks where the Colts fall behind and they have to throw, and he can get downfield, and that's going to be very useful. But yes, we do see Mitchell as a year one loser. Go ahead.
I have a question. The Colts last year, they were 18th in team pass attempts per game. I think they fall there with a full season of Richardson and Jonathan Taylor. I don't know if they're throwing it 33.8 times a game.
Because what's going to happen is now defenses do have to worry about these receivers. You can't just overstack the box and say, okay, we're fine. You got Pittman, Mitchell, and Downs. It's a real problem for defense. Defense are going to play nickel against them frequently. And now when you're using the RPO looks between Richardson and Taylor, when Richardson goes to make that RPO move, he's going to see an open space. And that's going to be, it's going to necessitate a run option, be it Richardson taking the ball himself or handing it to Taylor. And there is going to be a lot of success on the ground. This is a master move by the Colts, presenting three threats at receiver for two explosive runners. So you're right. That number 18 passing rate, that is likely to go down this year. And overall, this is going to hurt Pittman too. Pittman's a loser here too, because Mitchell will get some targets. Alec Pierce just got a couple courtesy targets. They were just a couple airing out downfield, fine, whatever. Mitchell might get a couple more than that. Instead of the 2 to 4 targets a game, this could be like a 3 to 6 targets in some games. And so it may be a little bit of a knock. And Josh Downs was playing through a bad knee. We learned when he hurt his knee before that New England overseas game that the knee injury had been since the preseason. He played well through it. But then after that, down the stretch, he wasn't the same player. He'll be healthy this year. So Pittman's going to lose some targets. I love Pittman. He's one of my favorites. But there's only, and you said the passing rate's probably going to go down. So what do we think about Pittman?
I didn't think about that, but yeah, I think you're right. And we're paying a high price for Michael Pittman when it comes to ADP. And it could be that type, like where last year you paid a low price and it paid dividends. This year, if you're drafting Pittman at cost, it might blow up in our faces.
Very concerned about that. Jalen Wright, the running back, was a loser here. He goes to the Dolphins. Now, long term, he's going to probably be fine here because we know how much Mike McDaniel loves his speed. But right now, you got Raheem Mostert, you got Devon Achan in there, and they are going to dominate work, and Wright's going to be a third option. Chris Brooks is more of a banger, didn't really play a lot. He got hurt last year when he got on the field. Jeff Wilson, I don't know if he'll be a factor. But there's a lot of people there. I think from a dynasty standpoint, Mostert's 32. Achan, we don't know what his long-term health is. He's fine right now, but he missed a lot of time last year. So Wright could move into a role, but for week one, for sure, this was a loser spot.
Yeah, absolutely. They paid Mostert. He is getting up there. He's managing to stay healthy a little bit in Miami, but anything can happen. There's always that proverbial running back cliff, and Mostert's on borrowed time. I love Achane, but a little bit undersized, did deal with a lot of injuries in his rookie year. So there could be a path for Jalen Wright to see immediate production in year one, but it's very injury dependent, and I can't draft a guy high for that reason. I will probably stash him on some benches, but you're right. In dynasty formats, Jalen Wright, almost like Benson, should be a target for the long term. But guys like Salvin Ahmed and Jeff Wilson, Wright should overtake their spots in the depth chart.
Especially the way Mike McDaniel loves speed, and that's what Jalen Wright's going to bring. Braylon Allen was a loser. Now, we have differing opinions on him. I thought he was going to be a decent grinder back. I didn't think he was anything super special out of Wisconsin, but I thought a good grinder back. He gets drafted by the Jets. Breece Hall will leave the field occasionally, not much. And so this is just a place where you're not going to see 10 carries. That's not going to happen. You might see four to five, six, maybe. You're not going to see much more than that. Only when Breece Hall needs a breather, and that's going to be about it. Braylon Allen?
Yeah, you know, we saw the Jets last year. They drafted Abanaconda. They brought in Dalvin Cook, which kind of maybe told us they don't want Breece to have the full workload coming off the injury. Well, he's not coming off an injury anymore. And this is a Jets team that Super Bowl window just got a little bit smaller. They kind of busted a year with that Aaron Rodgers injury. So if they're going to go all in, I expect a big-time workload out of Breece Hall.
As of today, Ricky Pearsall is a loser. He was drafted by the 49ers. Now, a lot of people thought he was not a first-round pick. The 49ers, it seemed very obvious to those watching the draft. The 49ers made this pickup of Ricky Pearsall because the expectation was that on day two of the draft, and they didn't on day one, they were going to trade either Deebo Samuel or Brandon Ayuk. And when they decided to draft the slot receiver Pearsall, it seemed like Deebo Samuel, that was the buzz that he was going to get traded. Well, there was no trade. And at this point, it's very hard to think the 49ers are going to be able to trade them, because trading for next year draft capital, that doesn't really help a team in a very tight Super Bowl window. So it would seem the probability, as Deebo and Ayuk say, that means Ricky Pearsall is an odd man out in an offense that doesn't use a ton of three receiver sets anyway. And they don't need a slot because they have Deebo. And when they need three receiver sets, Juwan Jennings is an amazing blocker, and they need that in their scheme. So Pearsall is a loser.
Absolutely. And there is a buy window in dynasty here, because there is no immediate path to targets or production for Pearsall. But what I believe what the 49ers are doing is that they're looking ahead. They know they're not going to be able to give Ayuk what he wants and keep Deebo too. Now, is there a long shot that, again, and you're right, it makes no sense trading for draft picks in the future, but it's not like Deebo is going to give them like high draft capital anyway. So is there a chance that a team might come in here and offer and maybe try to overpay for Deebo? Because on draft day, what is Deebo really worth? A player with his skill set, very good, but he's not a defined wide receiver, has an injury history. Is there a chance that a team that, let's say they lose a player in training camp, would a team offer a second for Deebo, and would the 49ers take it? Because I don't think he's worth a second round pick.
No. So again, Ricky Pearsall, definitely a draft day loser. The last one we have, Xavier Leggett. We like Xavier Leggett. He can get downfield very well, and that's a big commodity in the NFL. He goes to the Panthers. As of what we saw last year, Bryce Young is not necessarily a passer that we want to count on throwing the ball downfield. Now, he didn't have legitimate downfield weapons. The offensive line underperformed last year. So there is a world where maybe Young is more than we thought he was. Possible. The line could bounce back. Both Taylor Moton and Ikem Ekwonu did not have great seasons to tackle. The interior line was beat up. They did make some addressing of the offensive line in the offseason. There's a world where it works out. But I'm not optimistic about Bryce Young supporting a more downfield type player.
Yeah, this is going to be a project player, and it's really because of the landing spot, because of Bryce Young. You know, this offense and Bryce are going to be a work in progress. They brought in Deontay Johnson. We know what he's going to be. They brought in Jonathan Brooks. This tells me that they want to run the ball, probably funnel targets to Deontay Johnson. So what's really left over for Leggett in year one?
So that concludes the losers. A couple final thoughts on the draft. I thought the Bills did well. They had some defensive ends, but what they really did was they got a backup for James Cook and they got an outside receiver. Are the Bills in a Super Bowl window?
I'm going to say no, because we don't know who this young receiver is yet. We don't know if he's going to come out the gate and pop. Like, you know, for them to be in a Super Bowl window now, I feel like they would have to go and get a Neighbors or Marvin Harrison. And that's the type of player I think that could put Buffalo over the top.
The Steelers made major additions in the draft to their offensive line. Now, you never know if these pan out, but they invested some significant draft capital in the line. We know they brought in Arthur Smith to get the running game going. The Rooney family loves to run the ball. They have two running backs in Najee Harris and Jaylen Warren. Are the Steelers a better team today than they were before draft weekend?
Yeah, I love what Pittsburgh did in this draft. And the offensive line for a couple of years have been an issue. You cannot run the Arthur Smith offense without offensive line help. They go and get two, what we believe are week one starters. On top of that, they bring in Roman Wilson. They had a little bit of a hole in wide receiver. And I get, you don't need a lot of high profile receivers in the Arthur Smith offense. Go ask Kyle Pitts and Drake London, but they did address that need. So I love what Pittsburgh's has done. Even with Russell Wilson, you're not asking Russell Wilson to drop back and throw it 30, 40 times. Manage the game and don't give it away.
We did talk about Patrick Mahomes earlier, but the Kansas City Chiefs, we knew they added Xavier Worthy, a big speed threat, which Mahomes buys times, extends plays. They really need that. But they also added a few offensive linemen. Two could be relevant. They added safety and a cornerback a little later with the cornerback. But that said, this was a good offseason. They lost to Jarius Tate, but it was a good offseason for the Chiefs. Are the Chiefs in better Super Bowl standing than the team that's already won the last two? Are they more firmly entrenched than they were?
Even losing Snead, I think the Chiefs are a better team now than they were despite winning the Super Bowl, because you gave Patrick Mahomes weapons, and that just makes him more dangerous. Didn't think this guy could get any more dangerous, but the Chiefs figured out another way to make that happen.
The Detroit Lions, they added a cornerback in the second round. They added a cornerback, I mean, in the first round. So there are two straight cornerbacks they added. This is a team that needed a lot of defensive help. They added a tackle in the fourth round. So other than that, is this team much better than they were? With the rookies, we never know how they're going to pan out. But making these moves on the defense, does this give them some better competition and closer to dethroning the 49ers as the NFC champs?
I would say yes, but this is also a team that was never used to winning. Or, you know, we talk about the term Super Bowl hangover. Are the Lions going to have any type of a title game hangover or a winning hangover? I would say no, but that is in the back of my mind. Plus, they're in a division now. Chicago looks like a better football team. You know, if J.J. McCarthy works out, they're going to be a better football team. And, of course, Green Bay exceeded expectations. So, like, this NFC North is going to be a lot tougher to win.
The Eagles seem to have a very fortuitous draft. Quinyon Mitchell, many had him as the top cornerback, falls to pick 22. Of course, the Eagles take him. Cooper DeJean in the second round, another corner, could play slot corner, could move him to safety. He's there. My crazy thought is maybe James Bradbury moves to safety as he kind of fell off at corner. They still have Darius Slay. They add an edge rusher in the third round. They do have some talent up front. The linebacker position is going to be an issue for them. Did they get better enough on defense to be reasonably competitive and let their outstanding offense carry them? Because right now they're going to have to win shootouts. Is it they better enough that they're going to be a serious contender for the NFC?
No, their defense is going to be young, and their offense, as we've seen, is good enough. And I like the Kellen Moore addition, so it's going to be even better to win those shootouts. At some point, if these young defensive players that Howie not only took last year, a couple guys from Georgia, and then this year, if they work out, I would say by midseason, this defense should be middle of the pack, and that makes Philly possibly the most dangerous team in the NFC.
Anthony, as we wind up the end of this draft conclusion and thinking about all that went down, what were your overall final thoughts on the draft weekend?
you know, the thing that sticks out the most is how offensive heavy, and the league is offensive heavy, but this year's draft was so offensive heavy on day one. There was so much defensive talent to spill over, and we saw that in the second round. So I'm not, if the quarterbacks in this draft end up working out at a higher rate than usual, then I think we have our next core of great quarterbacks. But if it doesn't, and believe me, it doesn't always work out with these heavy quarterback drafts, then, you know, a lot of these teams just set themselves back.
The quarterback hit rate in the first round has always been below 50%. Yeah. History tells us of these six quarterbacks taken in the first round, at least three, if not four of them, are not going to be factors. And maybe it'll be an outlier class, but I don't particularly see it that way. We don't know which quarterbacks are going to come through. We're hopeful for Caleb Williams walking into a great situation. The question mark is, in my mind, it's going to be an either or. It's going to be Drake May or Jaden Daniels. I don't know that both come through. I have questions on both. It'll be very interesting to see. Thanks to our sponsor, Prize Picks, the best way to get action on sports in more than 30 states across the country. And we want to thank everyone out there for listening to us. You can find Anthony at The Real NFL Guru. You can catch me over at Jim Coventry NFL. Come back next week for another edition of the RotoWire Fantasy Football Podcast.
When you make decisions for your company, you always look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing and shipping to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your process to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, books, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart if you sell online. Schedule package pickups through the dashboard and automatically see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers, with rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are, even on the go. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other business decision makers with Stamps.com. Sign up at Stamps.com with code PROGRAM for a special offer that includes a 4-week trial, plus free postage, and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.